Support for WEAA is provided by University of Phoenix, hosting its first annual Military Appreciation Night, November 16th at 1800 at their campus in Columbia. Information at uopmaryland.eventbrite.com.
You've got a lot of heavy traffic traveling out of the city and a crash on the inner loop of the Beltway. We'll start there. This report brought to you by Hammer Mill Paper on the inner loop before Quarantine Road. A crash has the left lane blocked. Continuing to make your way around on the inner loop, slowing between 295 and Liberty Road and then Park Heights Avenue to Lockraven. If you're going to be traveling in the outer loop, slowing Harvard Road to Charles Street and then Reisterstown Road to Edmondson Avenue. 50 eastbound, a crash at Route 8. It's got the right lane and the right off-ramp lane blocked. And then traveling on 395 southbound, MLK Boulevard to 95, heavy delays, and 895 northbound Pulaski Highway to the 95 split. For more information, log on to SigAlert.com. I'm Jamie Sullivan, Baltimore area traffic.
Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland Division of Transplantation, where patients' lives are enhanced by a renowned transplant program known for innovation and excellence in kidney, liver, and pancreas transplants. For more information, the number is 1-800-492-5538, or you can jump on over to the SteinerShow.org website and click on the University of Maryland Medical System banner. Information is all there. We're going to turn our attention to what happened at Occupy Washington this week and the hearings that took place yesterday there at Occupy DC. We're joined by Kevin Zeese, one of the organizers of Occupy Washington and also co-director of It's Our Economy and chair of Come Home America, and Gar Alperovitz, who is an author, journalist, activist, professor of political economy at University of Maryland, founder of the Democracy Collaborative. Kevin and Gar, welcome. Good to have you both with us.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
So I'm sorry I wasn't able to get to D.C. for this. But we were off on the Eastern Shore taping, so I couldn't get there yesterday. But I'm really fascinated by this, by what took place. Kevin, let me lead off with you with just talk a bit about what you organized and what took place.
Well, people can see it on our website, OccupyWashingtonDC.org, C-SPAN coverage. We put a link up on the website, the blog page, so people can see what happened. We had essentially what we called an occupied super committee hearing for the 99%, and we put forward evidence-based solutions to the economic crisis in the United States, how to get the economy moving, create jobs, and get the government's budget deficit under control. And we really emphasized evidence-based solutions that are outside the box, I mean, of the political limits of Washington, D.C. You always hear in Washington that something's not politically realistic or politically possible, something like single-payer health care, which has proven to be the best way to provide health care to a large group of people, the single-payer system, but it's always off the table. And you see that on issue after issue. And so we presented fact-based alternatives on how to deal with the deficit, how to deal with the jobs crisis, and how to get the economy moving. And I think it was a pretty powerful a series of witnesses, and we had people covering tax issues, health issues, Social Security, jobs, and then Gar wrapped it up talking about how we can shift power and democratize our economy.
So, and Gar, welcome. Good to have you with us. I look forward to getting you back here to talk about the new edition of your book coming out.
Great.
But let's talk a bit about, I mean, before we jump into the difference between the hearings that might have taken place at Occupy and the secrecy of what's happening in the super committee, which is making decisions about our lives that we're not even part of. Your take and your work over the years on how to change our economy and make it more democratic are really, I think, kind of groundbreaking and unique in terms of how people approach politics. Talk a bit about that.
Well, in one sense, first I want to congratulate Kevin and the folks at Freedom Plaza who really did a great job in organizing it. But I think what's happening is at the national level, there's a stalemate and deadlock and decay. But there is room at the local level and at the state level to do really all kinds of rebuilding, and in particular, rebuilding that changes who owns wealth and how we have social ownership of wealth in a very, very down-home, practical American way. So let me give you an example. There are something like 11,000 worker-owned companies in the United States, which the press doesn't cover. And that's just thousands of them, 5 million more people involved than involved in labor unions, some good, some bad, many of them improving regularly in participation. And in many other parts of the country, there are 120 million Americans are members of co-ops. And there are 4,000 or 5,000 neighborhood-owned corporations trying to provide benefits for the neighborhood. All of this is a way of owning and democratizing at the very grassroots level wealth and productive wealth compared with the 1% that owns at least half of the investment capital at the top. So this is a real way. And because of the pain levels and because of the failures of the current way of going about things, I see a trend of developing this whole trajectory at the state and local level, which the press simply doesn't know about it or cover it. But it is laying foundations for something, I think, which is going to be very exciting. The only other thing I would add is that some of the states are beginning to develop it too. Single payer is on the agenda in about 20 states now. And it's going to take a long while to move it, but if the federal government can't move to single payer, again, going back to the grassroots, and in this case the states, we're moving towards public ownership of health care. That's what's called Medicare rather than the insurance companies. That's what single payer is, and it changes the ownership structure, again, in a very American way. So there's a lot going on that I think is very exciting, a lot of it driven simply by failure, but a lot of it giving people some real inspiration.
You know, Kevin, when Gar was talking about the single payer and the healthcare issue, one of the issues around the deficit and things I think I know you talked about it, Margaret talked about it at your deficit event yesterday, are the trillions of dollars we spend on medical care that even dwarfs our defense spending, and how that is a piece that we don't talk about in terms of the things that Gar just mentioned.
Well, it's about 18% of our GDP, so healthcare is a major cost, and it is the driver of deficits, especially at the state level, but also at the federal level. And so it's one of many issues we have to deal with and confront that we're not able to confront because of the dysfunction of the corporate power at the federal level, and sadly often at the state level too. But I think what Gar was talking about really crystallizes the issue to me, because what the Occupy movement's about is ending corporate rule and shifting power to the people. And when you put that in economic terms, what that means is democratizing the economy. It's getting past big finance capitalism, the kind of crony capitalism we see with mass corporate welfare, funneling resources at the top, and past the, state-based socialism that we've seen around the world that hasn't worked very well either. And so the centralized socialism also is a failure. So what we're looking at is a new alternative model, and that's democratizing the economy. And that's very consistent with what this Occupy effort's about. It's about the battle between participatory democracy and concentrated wealth. And democratizing the economy means shifting power and ownership to people or public institutions. And that's really what I think is so important about what we're trying to do, and that's what our hearing tried to focus on. And, while we want to pull government along with us and often need government to help make that happen, especially at the local level, people should realize they have power as well, that we can develop an alternative economy, employee-owned cooperatives. We can build on existing structures like credit unions and community banks. You can get involved in a community bank. You can go in and meet the leadership. You can go to board meetings. You can send a demand or a request that funds be spent on a specific community project. And they'll respond to that. They have to consider it. They're required to consider it. And so you can have some influence on where money goes in the economy. And if we can, when the next financial crisis hits, and I'm sad to say there probably will be another economic collapse, just looking at Europe and Greece and the realities of Bank of America, and the reality of the gigantic derivatives market that still is not regulated adequately, those are all signals of another collapse. When it comes and the banks require more bailout, I think you're going to see a breakup of these big banks. And when that happens, we need to shift banking to the community level, to the credit union level, which is already happening. People are already doing it with their feet. They're already moving from Bank of America types to the community banks and credit unions. And when the next collapse happens, you're going to see it happen more quickly. And when that happens, people need to get involved. They need to start to talk about, that's what participatory democracy is, participating. That's what participatory economy is, participating. It's not just voting. It's actually participating with your local groups and banks and community organizations to actually help to direct where resources go.
We're talking about what happened yesterday at Occupy D.C. and the deficit hearings that they held there. You just heard Kevin Zeese, organizer of Occupy Washington, D.C. We're also joined by Gar Alperovitz. His book, America Beyond Capitalism, will be out in a couple of weeks. We'll have him back on for that. Author, journalist, activist, professor, founder of the University of Maryland, and founder of the Democracy Collaborative. 410-319-8888 is the number here. And Jerry, you're on the air.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you,
hi, everybody. Kevin, how are you? It's Jerry Reitzik. Gar, how are you? I'm sitting here with your book in front of me, the one that came out in 2005, Beyond, America Beyond Capitalism. And looking through it, I wonder if you could comment. I obviously, you have a new book coming out, or another copy of this one. Do you see movement from 2005 to now, particularly in the economic world? Can you comment on that?
Sure. You've got the 2005 issue of America Beyond Capitalism. It came out a couple of years too early. Now that the deepening crisis is there, we're bringing it out with a whole long new introduction and a new theoretical section, and then an introduction by a foreword by Gus Speth, one of the leading environmentalists, who and part of the movement is represented by people like Gus Speth. Gus is a guy who was really part of the inside of the establishment of the environmental movement. And he finally realized that, you know, advisor to Clinton, advisor to another president, the Democratic presidents, and he basically, Carter, he basically came to the conclusion that, look, you're really going to have to change who owns the system or you're not going to get anywhere in the environment. He's a kind of insider's insider. That trend, people beginning to realize something is wrong, I think is the key point, and it opens the way to saying, you know, as Kevin said, you got to get in there and do something about it, and that's. Right. I think that's very exciting to see that begin to happen. I think we're on the verge of another great American progressive era or populist era, but this time, going at the real ownership questions in the economy, both directly, as in when the banks start begging for more money. Well, there was enough money, taxpayer money, to put into those banks. They certainly should have become public banks. The same thing happened with General Motors and Chrysler. We put in a lot of public money and just gave it back to private owners. Some of that ought to stay in the public realm, making mass transit and rail. But at the local level, there are worker-owned companies and co-ops and land trusts, things people can do tomorrow. Credit union situation, people moving their money to credit unions, direct action this last weekend, you know, millions of dollars moved.
Right.
And it's another way to show exactly what you can do. We're going to build the credit unions. Those are nonprofit, citizen-owned banks, and we can shift our money there. And acting directly to do that is another way to build this alternative economy that's slowly and steadily building up below the horizon that the press simply just doesn't know anything about, doesn't have money to cover it, and doesn't have any interest. But anyone who looks deeply at it, by the way, I'll give you a web page where we survey it, there is enormous amount going on under the surface. Community-wealth, put the dash in, and you can find out a lot of what's going on in addition to America Beyond Capitalism, which is available now for pre-order from Dollars and Cents.
Can I make one more comment, Mark, real quick?
Oh, go ahead. We don't have much time today, but go ahead.
Okay. So in terms of what you just said, Gar, and what Kevin has said, over here in Baltimore, we have an alternative currency that's been going now for about a year and a half. And it's changed. We have 150 businesses that accept it. We have $25,000 in circulation. And the whole conversation about wealth, what money is, and what we value into, is taking place here in Baltimore. And I believe that those are the kind of things that you guys are talking about. And we in here, over here in Baltimore are trying to do that with the B-notes.
Great. Yeah, I think Baltimore, well, this is Kevin here, and Baltimore is doing some great stuff with the B-notes, and there's also talk now of a time bank, which is another way to avoid the banking system. What that is you volunteer time to do something, and you get a certain number of hours for your time, and you can go to the bank and withdraw hours from a carpenter or withdraw hours from a plumber who's also in the bank. And you have this new economy that doesn't involve money, but it involves using your time. And by the way, that kind of time and that work you get done is income tax free. And so it's a way to get things done actually more cheaply, and it's a way to avoid the whole banking system. I think this kind of creativity is what's going to happen more and more at the local level. And I think it's because we see the dysfunction in Washington. I think one thing that the hearing yesterday pointed out that's really important is that there are evidence-based solutions to the economic crises that the country faces. And these evidence-based solutions would not only deal with the deficit, but they would actually get the economy moving. They would shrink the wealth divide. They would have a much more fair tax system. And these all exist. They're all proven. They all work. But you're not going to hear that from the Deficit Commission. You're going to hear from the Deficit Commission cutting Medicare, cutting Medicaid, cutting Social Security, no real reductions in military spending, no real taxes on the wealthy. You're not going to hear any of the real solutions. And so this discord between reality and the Congress is going to become more and more evident. And that's what we want to do with this. Our goal with this hearing was really is to show how out of touch Congress is, not just to the people, but to real solutions that exist. Because there are real solutions. You don't have to have this mess of an economy. If we didn't have such a corrupt government, corrupted by, concentrated wealth and corporate power, we'd be in a whole different situation. We'd be on the right track rather than the wrong track. And people can see this on our hill website, OccupyWashingtonDC.org. You can see the C-SPAN hearing. And that's just one of several things we're doing. Today we had a protest at the Federal Housing Finance Agency asking that the mortgages now reflect the value of homes. People are still paying housing bubble prices for their homes. This housing bubble was created by very unethical lending practices, pumped up the value of homes. The bubble breaks, and the banks still get money from homeowners paying housing bubble prices. So the villains who caused this crisis keep getting wealthy, while the people who are suffering because of the bankers create this housing bubble. So we need to correct that. And if you correct that, by the way, you would actually do a lot to get the economy on track because you create a foundation in the housing market, which is critical to rebuilding the economy.
Gar, one of the things I was thinking about when we were doing the show today and reading what's going on Capitol Hill in the other deficit hearings in the super committee is I think a lot of people were just really unaware because there's not much reported on it because it's such a secret committee about what is about to come down on the Americans. Could you talk a bit about that? I mean, that's...
No, they're going to. If they come to agreement of any kind, it's going to cut major cuts in Medicare is going to be a big part of it, and they're going to start cutting whatever subsidies of various kind in programs that are very important to people. They'll probably cut the military budget. But I say if what is most likely, you remember, none of this is going to happen in the real world, no matter what they do, until 2013. So much of it is shadow boxing. It's a game being played. But so whatever you see in the headlines, it isn't going to happen until after the next presidential election, and probably by that time everything's going to change. But the whole focus is on cut, cut, cut. And I want to underline what Kevin was saying. Look, this is the richest economy in the history of the world. The top 1% have reaped enormous benefits. You can easily find money from the tax programs if they were back what they were in the Eisenhower era or even in the Reagan era, when the top rates were 91% under Eisenhower and 70% under the beginning of the Reagan era. You could easily deal with these deficits. But you don't. The other part of it is the programs for the health care programs, and again, Kevin mentioned this in passing, most countries around the world can do it with almost half the same amount of money and get better results. It's the insurance companies that are running these programs in a way that cost us 18%, going to be 20% of the gross national product. If we ran a Medicare for all, we could be talking about essentially ending this whole deficit business on its own. So that what you're looking at is a kind of a propaganda war covering up some basic facts that many, many economists know but never get through to the public. The truth is that if you begin at the grassroots level, and this is one aspect that I want to underline,
mm-hmm.
if you begin doing things at the grassroots level, time dollars, banks, co-ops, worker ownership, et cetera, you learn about the economy with your hands on, and it opens up a real perspective simultaneously to think about the big picture. And that's the goal, not just to do grassroots things, but to move at the state, local, federal level, ultimately. And in the way, like the New Deal, in many ways, was built up from ideas that were generated locally, and then they became national programs when the time was right. So I think that's the process we're involved in, a great new populist, progressive a rebuilding era that's really talking not just about regulation and not just about taxing, but really changing who owns the economy instead of the top 1% having half of the wealth ownership and the top 400 having more wealth than the bottom 60%. We're talking about changing who actually owns things in a practical way and in a realistic and in a very community-based American way.
And if you watch what this secret super committee is doing, and in terms, especially regarding what you were saying in terms of where you think it's going, the American people, it seems at the moment, are also in a place where we're almost en masse groping to figure out what it is. Do you know what I'm saying? I mean,
yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
if you look at all the Occupy movements happening right now, people say, "Oh, you should need to give us an agenda. You have to tell us what your agenda points are and how your policy changes are going to be." But I think in some ways it's not there, because it's what the American people are doing too, which is really knowing something is really, really wrong. And
well, you know, I think, Mark, you know, I think what I've found in this Occupy movement that's been, I think, very important is the American people are more with it than we give them credit for.
I don't disagree with that.
Yeah, I'm dealing with people on Freedom Plaza of all levels of wealth and wide range of age, from, you know, their late teens to their 70s. We have a very mixed group here, and people get it. They know from their experience that something's wrong because they've been affected by it. But then they know that the media, the corporate media, is not providing information. You never hear Gar Alperovitz in the New York Times, you know, on the op-ed page. You don't see that. While we got covered by C-SPAN yesterday, you didn't see the Washington Post covering the joint committee that we held, the super committee hearing we held yesterday. Even though it's filled with facts and filled with solid experts as well as great opinions from the 99%, who spoke from the audience, they should have covered that. And so we have a big problem. You know, we are lucky that we're developing an alternative to the corporate media. We have now an independent media that's a couple decades old and starting to get mature. Plus, we have now a democratized media where every individual can become a media outlet, turn their cell phone into a live stream TV or use their social networks to reach thousands of people. And we're starting to figure out, I think, in that democratized media, how we can work together to reach more people in the corporate media. We're not there yet, but we're getting to that point. And just like you have this undercurrent growing that Gar describes of the democratized economy at the local level, we're seeing the same thing in the media. And we're seeing it in other sectors of society as well. So there's going to be a lot of change. And I think, you know, we are on the verge of a major shift in the power structure, in ownership, in communications. We are really at the beginning of something very big. I know we're planning something very big. Next spring, we're starting to get people excited about a national Occupy Washington, now D.C. we're calling it, National Occupy Washington, D.C. And we just started sharing with other Occupies. We've got Occupy Wall Street and Freedom Plaza are joining together to make this happen. It's going to be tens of thousands of people on the mall camping out. So this is, you're seeing the beginnings of a movement here. It's going to grow into a much bigger movement next year.
And I'm curious if you, with your work with Democracy Collaborative, if you see, let's say, the people, the work you've done in Cleveland with the workers' co-ops there in the inner cities, if are people consciously feeling part of this larger process beyond the collaborative?
Well, I think what you're beginning, the Cleveland effort is very interesting. I think you've covered it with my colleague Ted Howard.
Yeah, we have.
Where these we've been working with the folks in Cleveland to build a conglomerate of a number of worker-owned companies linked together with a nonprofit corporation, not just for worker co-ops, but building the community as a whole. And I think they're beginning to see that they are the in some ways this very down-home, very practical, very American style of rebuilding from the bottom up is part and parcel of what we're talking about here. And so I think that is another convergence. One of the things that really is happening, I think you put your finger on it, Mark, people get it, and Kevin's talking about that something's really wrong, and they haven't been presented with an alternative of what makes sense. If they don't like, I sometimes put it this way, you don't like corporate capitalism, you don't like state socialism, what do you want? Well, what you want is a rebuilding that is very democratic and very American, and that idea is beginning to develop. And the second thing is beginning to develop is a way forward, slowly, steadily building up the way we've done it in the progressive era and the populist era, laying down groundwork, ultimately getting to the national level. And those things together, a vision of where we want to go, practical things like what's going on in Cleveland, building from the bottom up, and a long-term strategy, that's the name of the game. And when you have that clear, what you get is a lot of energy. That's what movements really are all about. They begin to see their own power is there. It's a very exciting time, I think, potentially. And the question is, can we do it intelligently and thoughtfully and do it in a way we can talk to people? You know, I'm from Racine, Wisconsin. I can talk to my conservative high school friends in Racine about what this means. If you talk about it practically and concretely and show
right.
examples, you can really reach people because they want to do the right thing. Rather, the rhetoric sometimes puts them off, but really, people are much more open, in my experience, than many think.
Gar, I completely agree with that last statement. I think that's one of the most important points to make is how broad this is, and I agree with you absolutely about reaching out beyond these lines and how people who feel in the conservative world really do buy into a lot of the stuff that we're talking about now.
Right.
I want to thank you both. We have to go now, but we're going to bring you both back soon as we continue our coverage of Occupy DC and the rest of America. And Gar Alperovitz will be back with us soon to talk about the new edition of America Beyond Capitalism coming out in a couple of weeks. So Kevin Tease and Gar Alperovitz, thank you so much for being with us here for this half hour.
Thank you, Mark.
Thanks a lot.
Take care. And all the information will be on our website as well. On the way out of here, let me remind you that the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. More information at www.mecu.com. It is a credit union, which means it belongs to you. And you can find out more information also at steinershow.org and clicking on MeQ's banner. We'll be right back with my dear friend Mario Armstrong, who is putting on an incredible event that has to do with African Americans, minorities, and the new technology centers, the problems, and the promise. So stay with us. We'll be right back.